Last week in our worship service, we took time to say goodbye and thank you to our retiring interim director of religious education. And it was important that we take that time, but it meant that the service might run a bit long, and so I made the decision in the moment to make my sermon on African American women in history a two-part sermon so that these important stories of trailblazing and courageous women could have their due. And I'd like to issue a correction, though, to something I said last week as I was extemporizing, always a little dangerous, about an experience I had had just the day before when I attended a women's basketball game at Old Dominion University in Norfolk. At the beginning of the game, a group of African-American students at ODU, members of a gospel choir, sang the national anthem. And as I listened to their beautiful singing, I thought about the uproar about Colin Kaepernick and other black athletes and some white athletes, too, taking a knee in protest of the treatment of people of color, most especially African-American men, by law enforcement and by the criminal justice system. And I was struck in that moment by all the attention on that benign and peaceful form of protest. Even as I was experiencing this all-black group singing about the land of the free and the home of the brave. I mean, if you are singing about the land of the free when you yourself do not enjoy all the benefits of freedom, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, to name but a few, what must it be like to sing of the land of the free when you yourself are not fully free? And as I wondered aloud about that with you last week, I saw some nodding heads, and then I went further and I mentioned that I noticed an absence of men in that college gospel group. There were many more women singers than men, and this is where I misstepped. I repeated an oft-made claim that perhaps it was because in today's America, an African-American male has a better chance of going to jail than to college. Now, these are words I have heard before from people like Jesse Jackson and Barack Obama, but I never investigated their accuracy. So last Sunday, a few hours after worship, I got an email from a member of this beloved congregation saying, "I was intrigued by your comments today, and so I investigated this claim about more black men in jail than in college, and I found these three sources that offer a different view, and I wonder what you think about them, and might we discuss this further?" I read the information they provided, and I now understand that the statistic I quoted is not accurate, that the rate of college attendance among African-American men is on the rise, and the rate of incarceration is starting to go down. Yes. And so I misspoke. And I share this, though, for a few reasons. First of all, because I would never want to pass along inaccurate or misleading information. And I would certainly never want to perpetuate a harmful stereotype, most especially about people of color. I will say, though, that it is disheartening, right, that men of color are so disproportionately caught up in the criminal justice system that this awful statistic sounds true, even if it's not quite as awful as my unexamined remark suggested. We should all be concerned about the ongoing problem of mass incarceration that does perpetuate a cycle of hopelessness and despair for so many of our black and brown siblings. Getting the facts wrong, as I did, can weaken the call for examination and reform, and so for that reason, most especially, I regret my error. But I also wanted to share this story because I was deeply moved by the way in which our beloved community member, whose permission I have to share this story, but who asked that I do so without naming them, the way in which they brought this mistake to my attention. They approached me with curiosity and not recrimination, with a "did you know" instead of "how could you?" and with an invitation to continue the conversation, to stay in connection. just exactly the kind of interaction I dream of for all of us, and what I hope we can continue to work toward as we strive to create the beloved community. So I say thank you to that person for correcting me and for doing so in love. And come to our covenant workshop next week and we'll all learn how to do that well. In the Audre Lorde piece I shared last week and again here this morning, she repeats the idea, you were never meant to survive. And this sounds kind of harsh, doesn't it? A cruel reminder of our mortality. And yet, I don't think she intends it to be cruel, but rather to be liberating. We are not meant to survive is Lorde's challenge to take action. As far as we know, we have but this one precious life, and it is brief. The challenges, and for people of color, challenge is putting it very mildly, the assaults, the losses, the indignities, the trauma, for those, as Lorde writes, who cannot indulge the passing dreams of choice, all those terrible and difficult things may continue to exist, but the power and the agency are in the response. Your silence will not protect you, says Lorde in another of her well-known essays. Last week we spoke of Harriet Tubman, who escaped slavery only to return time and time again to secure the freedom of others. She knew that she was not meant to survive, but she chose action. She chose to fight with her dying breath for freedom. Bessie Coleman was a different kind of change agent, but she broke down barriers and defied expectations about what a woman, and especially what a woman of color, could do. She was born to sharecroppers in Texas in 1892, and as a child, she listened on the radio to the daring feats of the pilots of World War I. She was determined to become a pilot. No women at that time, and certainly no African-American women, could be accepted into aviator training in the United States. So she learned French and attended pilot training in France. That's determination. And she flew, completing great feats of daring in traveling air shows. It was her dream to open a pilot training program for African Americans here in the U.S., but she died tragically in an accident at an air show at the age of 34. Pauli Murray is someone I learned about when reading about Eleanor Roosevelt, a great hero of mine. Pauli Murray was a young woman living in a work camp during the Depression. Mrs. Roosevelt visited the camp as First Lady and was taken with this young woman, the only African-American woman in the camp. She was impressed with her intelligence and her self-assuredness. Who was this woman who became a friend to the First Lady? And I would like to add a footnote here, because I would love for us to talk some more together about how we position ourselves with stories that include white allies and advocates who help to make room for a person of color. Eleanor Roosevelt is part of the story of Pauli Murray. That same Eleanor Roosevelt invited African-American opera singer Marian Anderson to sing at the Lincoln Memorial after the Daughters of the American Revolution denied her request to sing at Constitution Hall. The first words Anderson sang at that concert at the Lincoln Memorial, "My country, 'tis of thee, sweet land of liberty," echoed by Aretha Franklin some 50 years later at the inauguration of President Barack Obama. And I thought about this as I heard that group at ODU singing the national anthem. So white people have a part in the story of Marian Anderson, a singer who had traveled to Europe to have a career and who might not have had an audience here without the intervention of Eleanor Roosevelt, certainly not as large a stage. Marilyn Monroe challenged white nightclub owners to book Ella Fitzgerald, and she had a hand in helping Fitzgerald to get gigs in places where she would be noticed. That is part of the story. And I'd love for us to think together about how we talk about the role of white allies in important stories without glorifying the white person's role, right? So many of those stories talk about how hard the white person worked to get access for the person of color. So I would love for us to keep talking about that together. I know there was upset at the Academy Awards about this very thing, right? That the kind of feel-good story won over the one that was much tougher to experience. But back to Pauli Murray. She was born Anna Pauline Murray on November 20th, 1910. But she had a lot of tragedy early in her life. Her mother died when she was 3 years old suddenly. She went to live with an aunt. And then her father, when she was 12, still overcome with grief and depression, was admitted to a psychiatric facility where he was beaten to death by a guard. So much trauma to overcome. But Pauli Murray was bright and curious. She taught herself to read at age 5 and read everything she could get her hands on. By the time she graduated from high school at age 15, she was the editor of the school newspaper, president of the literary society, class secretary, a member of the debate club, top student, and a forward on the basketball team. Murray could have easily attended the local college for black students, but she objected to segregation on principle, and she wanted to go north, so she moved to the home of a cousin in New York City to establish residency there to complete high school, because the school for black students in her town in North Carolina only went through 11th grade. So she completed high school in New York, the only black student in a school of 4,000. And then entered Hunter College. She moved to Harlem and became friends with Langston Hughes and met W.E.B. Du Bois and became part of that emerging scene of black intellectuals and artists in Harlem in the late 1920s. She graduated from college in 1933 at the height of the Depression and held a variety of jobs and got involved in the labor movement. We are not meant to survive. She worked on behalf of others. She applied to the University of North Carolina for graduate school and was told that members of her race could not attend the university. This was in the 1930s. She asked the NAACP to help her sue the university for discrimination, but they declined to take the case. She rode the bus home from New York back to North Carolina for Easter and refused to move to the back of the bus and was arrested years before Rosa Parks became famous for a similar act. This action did bring Murray to the attention of other activists, and she became a sought-after speaker at fundraisers for progressive causes. And it was at one of these speeches that she met Thurgood Marshall, and he convinced her to go to law school. A law school professor who was also in the audience said he would arrange a scholarship for her to attend Howard University Law School, which she did. And this is where Pauli Murray did something that should have made her completely famous. Is she famous? Okay, just checking. She's not famous, but she did this. She made a point in her law class and in her final paper in 1944, that lawyers should argue against discrimination on the basis of separateness, not equality. That the separateness was in and of itself a violation of the Constitution. So this would go in the face of the separate but equal. Murray, at the time, bet her professor $10 that within 25 years, Plessy v. Ferguson, the case that legalized separate but equal discrimination, would be overturned. Not quite 10 years later, that law professor was working with Thurgood Marshall on the Brown v. Board of Education case, and he remembered the paper that Pauli Murray had written, and he put forth her argument, which won the day. So he got famous, and she got $10. Murray went on to teach at Brandeis, Massachusetts. And then, to almost everyone's surprise, she entered seminary and became the first African-American woman ordained in the Episcopal Church. A month later, she administered her first Eucharist at the little church in North Carolina where her grandmother, a slave, had been baptized. That is quite a journey in one lifetime. I wish I could say that hers was a happy story. She attained great success in her 75 years against the odds, but she lived a closeted life. She had relationships with women, but she did not identify as lesbian. It's possible that she was transgender. She tried to get hormones so that she could live as a man. Imagine trying to get at that time. And little is known about that part of her life. Audre Lorde was an openly lesbian Black activist, writer, and poet. February 18th would have been her 85th birthday, I think. She was born in 1934 and died of breast cancer in 1992 at the age of 58. She wrote powerful essays and journals about living with cancer, about the double or triple bind of being Black, female, and a lesbian, encountering homophobia in the Black community and racism in the women's community and sexism everywhere. It was Lorde who said, "Your silence will not protect you," and she encouraged many of us to come out, to be open and honest about our lives. I'll just insert a brief story. I was driving in my car one day, and I heard an interview. Terry Gross on NPR was interviewing Audre Lorde. This must have been in the late 80s. And she said, Terry said to Audre Lorde, "No, I understand that you live with your partner, a white woman, and that together over the years you have been raising your children from previous relationships together, and that you have always encouraged your children when they go to school to be open about who they are and who their family is. And why," asked Terry Gross, "would you know, kids can be so cruel, why would you want to subject your children to that kind of ridicule and scrutiny?" And Audre Lorde said, "When you spend energy hiding who you are, you give power to your enemies. When you spend energy hiding who you are, you give power to your enemies." I was driving in my car and I had to pull over. I had to pull over and stop the car because I thought, I have been hiding who I am and giving power away. And I decided in that moment that I would not be closeted anymore, that I was going to tell the truth. I went and told my therapist this, and she was so surprised that she laughed. It's not always good when you tell your therapist something serious and she laughs, but then we laughed together because it was striking. But she had that power. Your silence will not protect you. And so in that spirit, I have shared some of the stories of these lesser known but no less important heroes. Let us remember them, and let's keep sharing these stories and find more. There are so many more women that we could be talking about. When we speak, we are afraid our words will not be heard or welcomed. But when we are silent, we are still afraid. So it is better to speak, remembering that we were never meant to survive. Let us speak truth to power, and if we ourselves hold power, let us share it so that others might speak and gain power for themselves. We have but one wild, precious life. How will you spend yours? Let us sing together our closing hymn, number 287, Faith of the Larger Liberty.